Good afternoon, 4:30 and 66 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Ashley Chapman.
Instead of kids moving in phases as far as by floors, we just decided, we the university decided that we want the building completed. So that's why we delayed it.
Moorhead State University's VP for Facilities Management, Rick Linio, says there's been another delay for students to move into the new Andrews Hall dormitory.
Three people have been killed in a fire in Lawrence County, Ohio.
And gas prices have declined a bit in Kentucky over the past week.
In sports, Denver and Houston do battle in Monday Night Football.
But Luke has the stocks.
Your weather for tonight is going to be mostly clear and chilly. Lows in the upper 30s. A complete forecast after this news.
The Ohio Fire Marshal's Office is investigating the cause of a blaze early Sunday that killed three people in Chesapeake. The Lawrence County Sheriff's Department identified the victims as 27-year-old Tanessa Davis, 44-year-old Stephen Jeffrey, and 81-year-old Irma Hatton. Deputies say they were killed when a house on Rockwood Avenue went up in flames shortly after 1 o'clock. The home was said to be fully engulfed when firefighters arrived. Ed Webb is Chesapeake's fire chief. He spoke with WCHS.
The house was extremely old, weathered. The house was also probably a hoarder's house, and with the amount of stuff in the house, that made it extremely difficult to contain and find the victims.
Webb says two other persons were injured in the blaze and are being treated for burns at area hospitals.
Bracken County Coroner John Parker believes at least six sets of skeletal remains found at a construction site near Augusta are several hundred years old and likely those of Native Americans. According to the Maysville Ledger-Independent, the remains were discovered September 30th while a basement was being dug for a new home. The coroner is estimating that they are 500 to 700 years old, and one set may date back as many as 3,000 years. Parker says the remains have been turned over to archaeology experts at the University of Kentucky and will be reburied at other sites.
Sentencing is scheduled for November 7th in Montgomery County Circuit Court for a 30-year-old woman who pleaded guilty to giving her baby Suboxone when the 5-day-old infant would not stop crying. The Mount Sterling Advocate reports Chastity Lewis admitted to charges of first-degree criminal abuse. Prosecutors claim Lewis crushed a Suboxone pill into powder and rubbed it onto a pacifier to quiet the baby. When the child did not wake up after 14 hours, the baby's grandmother forced Lewis to take the infant to the hospital. The Department of Social Services reported the incident to the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, and Lewis was arrested in November 2015.
While he supports much of the proposal, Rowan County Chief Deputy Joe Klein believes having a local needle exchange program will create at least one issue. According to Klein, there's evidence that having a needle exchange will mean that there will be needles out in the community.
They gave some statistics the other night at the board meeting and shown that, I believe it was in Jefferson County, they'd give out 250,000 needles and over a period of time, but they only got like 100,000 needles in return or 150,000 in return. Well, that put 100 more thousand needles out on the street.
Because of that, Klein says police officers will have to be a lot more careful when approaching known drug users. Citing a need to prevent the spread of hepatitis C and HIV, the Rowan County Board of Health recently okayed a local needle exchange program. The Moorhead City Council and Rowan Fiscal Court still have to approve the plan. Klein wants those who exchange their old needles for new needles to go through a mandatory counseling program.
After hoping to get students moved in earlier this month, officials at Moorhead State say their goal now is to get them into the university's new 550-bed Andrews Hall by mid to late November. Rick Linio is MSU's Assistant Vice President for Facilities Management. He says contractors simply don't have the $28 million facility ready yet. Among other things, he notes, some painting still needs to be done, along with some drywall repairs.
Things of that nature. And really, basically, the majority of the work was just detail cleaning. A lot of paint dust, drywall dust there. Floors were dirtying inside the rooms, carpet. So that aspect still had to be done.
MSU has refunded the students scheduled to live in Andrews Hall their money for this semester.
As they continue to hunt for available land for the city's new police and fire stations, Moorhead officials haven't had much luck so far in that search. Initially, they wanted to build one facility to house both departments, but they had no success in locating a big enough piece of property that was also affordable. According to Mayor Jim Tom Trent, as the group continues to review potential sites where separate station houses can be built, a timetable for starting the projects remains uncertain.
Try to be as equitable as we can and be as efficient with the money we're given by the taxpayers. And we're hoping to, I would love to come in and say, hey, here we got a plan. And I see that coming. I just don't have a date yet. I don't even have a timetable.
Trent says while a few possible locations around town remain under consideration, the city isn't close to finalizing purchases of any of them.
Ashland City Commissioner Marty Goot says he's excited about the prospects for some economic development incentives proposed by a city official earlier this month. Goot is especially encouraged by Economic Development Director Chris Pullum's recommendation to do away with building permit fees for a year to induce new investments in the city.
Even without the incentives right now, we are just growing. We have building projects all over town. And this one thing that he promoted was a one-year building permit waiver. And within that 1 year, I think people will be knocking at the door. They already are at the mall. We have 65 businesses at the mall, and when a business goes out, there's somebody looking to go in.
Goot is quick to add a new Steak and Shake restaurant recently opened in Ashland, representing a $1.6 million investment. He says more than a dozen new businesses will be opening soon as part of a project on 9th Street.
The Ironton Tribune is reporting that Lawrence County has received its largest non-emergency state grant in the county's history. It's for $4.3 million and was announced Friday afternoon by Lawrence Treasurer Stephen Burcham. He says the money is to be used to clean up approximately 200 abandoned properties and vacant lots around the county. Burcham says the work will include demolition of structures, new construction, and greening of the sites. The funds were made available from the Ohio Department of Housing's Neighborhood Initiative Program.
According to a website that monitors gas prices in Kentucky daily, the average price for regular unleaded gas has dropped about 4 cents from last week. According to GasBuddy.com, the average price in the Commonwealth today is $2.15. Around the region, the lowest price in Moorhead is said to be $2.29. It's also $2.29 in West Liberty, $2.23 in Flemingsburg, and $2.12 in Maysville. Gas is selling for $2.14 in Grayson and Ashland. The lowest price in Kentucky today is $1.76. That's in Henderson. The most expensive gas is in Jeffersontown, where it's $2.56.
An app designed to stop texting and driving is getting the attention of law enforcement officials in Kentucky. WKYT reports that Lifesaver, the app that blocks a person's phone screen while a person is driving, is being praised by authorities in Kentucky as a tool that can prevent car accidents. James Howell is Lifesaver's director of marketing. He says the app connects with the phone's GPS and blocks the screen as soon as a car goes in motion. Woodford County Sheriff Wayne Wright says the app is a great tool because it prevents texting, emailing, and other forms of mobile communication while driving. He says he'll present the app next month to the Kentucky Sheriff's Association board meeting. He hopes the members will also support it.
A section of road in Owsley County will be closed for repairs this Friday. The Kentucky Department of Highways plans to close Kentucky 2024 to replace a drainage structure. H.B. Elkins is with the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. He says the project will probably take most of the day.
This is a fairly big project that we're undertaking here. It's a pretty big pipe that has to be installed. It may take a little bit longer than some of our normal one-day road closures to do these installations. We're looking at maybe 6 p.m., if not a little later on this one.
Elkin says the road will be completely closed that day, so motorists will need to use Kentucky 28 or 30 as alternative routes.
Adams County is upgrading its drinking water delivery system with the help of a loan from the Ohio EPA. We get the story from MSPR's Kyle Blankenbuehler.
The project involves the installation of a 75,000-gallon elevated water storage tank, piping, valves, and hydrants. EPA spokeswoman Heather Lauer says it's being funded mostly from a pair of $250,000 grants from the Ohio Public Works Commission and the Appalachian Regional Commission. She says the EPA is providing a low-interest loan of nearly $24,000 to cover the balance. Rick Adamson is general manager of the Water District. He says the project will boost water capacity and lay the groundwork for additional development.
In times that we have maybe a leak on the line somewhere and we have to shut the water line down, we can actually keep more people in service. It will also give us water storage in the northern part of Adams County that would actually help us if the usage were up something that day or something, we'd actually have that water to fall back on.
The Ohio EPA says the reduced interest rate on the loan will save the Adams County Regional Water District almost $4,800. Reporting from Ward State Public Radio News, I'm Kyle Blingenbuehler.
Former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear is reportedly under consideration for a cabinet post should Hillary Clinton be elected president next month. That story from Will Clark.
According to a report from Bloomberg Politics, Beshear is one of five names being considered by Clinton for the cabinet-level post of Agriculture Secretary should she win November's general election. This is the second position in a potential Clinton administration the former two-term governor is rumored to be considered for. As a report in Modern Healthcare last month says, Beshear's in the running to be the Health and Human Services Secretary. I'm Will Clark.
The former U.S. Marine and Yale Law School graduate who wrote the best-selling book Hillbilly Elegy about family life and culture in southern Ohio and eastern Kentucky says there are two prevailing mindsets in the Appalachian region that are at odds with each other. J.D. Vance talked about his book Sunday on C-SPAN's Q&A program. Vance graduated from high school in Middletown, Ohio, but his family's roots are in Jackson, Kentucky. His book examines those competing lifestyles.
Most of the people who are out of work are really trying to find a good job. They're trying to get ahead. They're trying, they're applying, they're putting out resumes, they're talking to friends and family. And you have to be cognizant that those people exist and you can't help but to feel bad for them. On the other hand, there are a lot of people in these communities who aren't working and who don't seem to care that they're not working.
Vance says he doesn't believe government programs to help the poor should be scrapped, but he thinks some of them were designed without understanding the nature of the problem.
West Virginia University will explore Appalachian art this week with two public events at the WVU Art Museum. Jacob Lindberg has that story.
Wood carving artist Minnie Adkins and musician Mike Norris are both from eastern Kentucky and will participate in the activities. Adkins, an Elliott County native, has work on display at the museum, and the duo have written several children's books together. The documentary O Appalachia, Arts and Lives of Appalachian Self-Taught Artists, will be shown Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Adkins and Norris will speak about their children's books at 12:30 on Wednesday, followed by a woodcarving demonstration. More information can be found at artmuseum.wvu.edu. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Jacob Lindberg.
The most popular masks kids are buying this year at a Halloween shop in Louisville are pretty much what you'd expect. That's according to Tracy Caulfield Johnson of Caulfield's Novelty Shop. She says the creepy clown masks are popular, but so are those of the two presidential candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Sometimes we can tell you who's going to win because usually the ones that we sell the most of are the candidates that do win. But this year it's about even.
Caulfield Johnson also says masks depicting the characters from the Suicide Squad are also selling very well this year. Taking a look at your weather forecast, including the listening area in the counties of Rowan, Bath, and Carter, tonight will be clear with lows in the lower 40s. Tuesday will be mostly sunny with highs in the lower 60s. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with lows in the mid-40s. Wednesday will be mostly sunny with highs in the lower 70s, and Thursday will be mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of rain and highs in the mid-60s. Your temperatures for the surrounding area, it is 67 degrees in Ashland, 65 in Flemingsburg, 69 degrees in Inez, 67 in both Lexington and Winchester, And it is currently 66 degrees on the campus of Morehead State University.
4:45, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio, and there isn't anyone we would rather spend a Monday afternoon with than you. On our feature segment this afternoon, Flemingsburg hopes it's finally solving its problems with some buzzards in one neighborhood. MSPR's Kyle Blankenbuehler has the story.
The black buzzards invaded a residential neighborhood near Stockwell Avenue back in the spring. Those living on the block were concerned that the buzzards might kill their dogs and cats and worried that the birds' droppings were a potential health hazard that could cause diseases such as histoplasmosis, encephalitis, or salmonella. Frustrated by the problem, city officials at one point last summer asked the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife for permission to shoot the buzzards. The department okayed the plan, but only if other methods to shoo them off failed. Mayor Marty Voyer says Flemingsburg police officers periodically go over to Stockwell Avenue and use various techniques, such as loud noises, to chase away the birds. And while that's worked to a certain degree, Voyer says the problem hasn't been solved.
Lots of times you may get two or three or four birds and then the rest of them go away and don't come back for a day or two. So you don't get very many removed at a time. So we have reduced the numbers some, but they're still there. They're still in the area. They'll be leaving soon, we think. They typically leave when the leaves fall off the trees. They generally go away and it'll be gone until spring.
Voyer's recently discussed that issue with members of the Flemingsburg City Council and says the town will be ready if and when the buzzards come back.
We talked about at the last council meeting making plans for when they return next spring. Hopefully it will be ready to go with a variety of hazing techniques at that time so that we can get them when they first come into roost at the beginning of the season. And if we can scare them away at that time, maybe they will stay away the remainder of the season.
Voyer's hopes the harassment techniques officials have decided on will convince the buzzards not to stick around Flemingsburg next summer.
Kind of limited, but mostly it's using pyrotechnics or noise to try to scare them off, basically. Typically, if you do that when they're first coming into roost, that's the best time, because if you do that, then they go someplace else. So maybe that interrupts their pattern, and they will just stay away and find a different place to roost.
For Voyers and the residents of Stockwell Avenue, the plan is to convince the black buzzards that Flemingsburg is not for the birds. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Kyle Blankenbuehler.
4:47, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Morehead State Public Radio. All Things Considered from NPR is coming up at 5 o'clock this afternoon, and we'll have sports with Sean in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the Kentucky Folk Art Center, presenting The Devil Made Us Do It, depictions of Satan in Kentucky folk art. On display through December 3rd, the exhibition examines how the character of the devil has been portrayed by generations of self-taught artists from Kentucky. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., the Kentucky Folk Art Center is a cultural, educational, and economic development service of Morehead State University.
Monday night matchup. Good afternoon. This is MSPR's Sports Report. I'm Sean Delaney. The Texans hope to hand the Broncos their third straight loss as the two teams face off in Monday night football in the Mile High City. Here's MSPR's Kenzie Thompson.
The stakes will be high as ex-Denver backup quarterback Brock Osweiler tries to lead his new team over his former one. Osweiler signed with Houston as a free agent in the offseason after taking the Broncos to a 5-2 record while subbing last year for the injured Peyton Manning. While both teams are 4-2, the 2016 Super Bowl champion Broncos will be out to end a two-game losing streak. Coach Gary Kubiak says Denver's offensive line must play better in front of new quarterback Trevor Siemian. Game time is 8:30. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Kinsey Thompson.
The Cincinnati Bengals got their season back on track yesterday. They improved to 3-4 with a 31-17 triumph against winless Cleveland at Paul Brown Stadium. Andy Dalton passed for 308 yards and two touchdowns for Cincinnati. Coach Marvin Lewis also got a great effort from running back Jeremy Hill, who rushed for 168 yards on just 9 carries.
We keep just over, emphasizing with Jeremy, just keep your shoulders pointed up the field. And when he does that, he's special. He bounced one outside today and he gained a yard and a half, And I think he looked at me right away and he shook his head and I go, yeah, I know. But that's good. He's still a young guy who's understanding and just got to keep going. But, we know he's a hell of a talent.
Hill's longest run of the day was 74-yard touchdown scamper. The Bengals will head to London later this week for a contest next Sunday against Washington. Taking a look at other news around the NFL, Bears quarterback Jay Cutler will return from a thumb injury to play against the Minnesota Vikings on October 31st. Cutler has been out since he suffered a thumb sprain in a September 19 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. Coach John Fox said Monday that Cutler has been cleared to play in the game next Monday night. His backup, Brian Hoyer, suffered a broken left arm against Green Bay in the Bears' 26-10 defeat last Thursday. Fox says Hoyer has had surgery. New York Jets quarterback Geno Smith has a torn ACL in his right knee and is seeking a second opinion on the injury that would end his season and likely his time with the team that drafted him. NFL Network first reported the severity of Smith's injury on Monday. Smith, a second-round pick in 2013, injured his knee while taking a sack from Baltimore's Matt Judon in the second quarter of the Jets' 24-16 win on Sunday. Smith, who got the start in favor of Ryan Fitzpatrick, had an MRI on Monday. The Jets will now apparently have to turn back to Fitzpatrick as their starting quarterback. Rowan County football coach Gene Peterson remains hospitalized after suffering a mild heart attack after the Vikings' 13-12 Friday night victory at East Carter. Defensive coordinator Kelly Ford says Peterson began feeling poorly after the team arrived back in Moorhead and his wife then rushed him to the hospital. Ford notes that Peterson is doing well and was up and about Saturday morning.
He's hoping that he's not going to be down very long, but, you know, it's going to be a day by day. And, you know, the way the doctors talked, you know, he's going to need his rest. But other than that, he's looking forward to probably be back within the week.
The 2-8 Vikings have this week off as they begin preparations for the Class 4A playoffs, which start a week from this Thursday. With his Eagles mired in a three-game losing streak, Moorhead State football coach Rob Tenier is not a happy man. Despite piling up 582 yards of total offense, Tenier's squad lost a weekend shootout at home to Jacksonville 61-49.
It was not a very fun game. It was kind of a disgusting game, to be honest with you. Really sloppy in a lot of facets, and not very pleased with the outcome, obviously.
The highlight for Moorhead Saturday was provided by redshirt freshman Trevor Jones, who rushed for a school record of 284 yards. The 2-6 Eagles have this week off before visiting Butler a week from this Saturday. Two of Cleveland's stars from the 1990s, Kenny Lofton and Carlos Baerga, will throw out the ceremonial first pitches at the World Series. Lofton, the fleet-footed center fielder, will have the honor before Game 1 as the Indians host the Chicago Cubs. Baerga, a three-time All-Star second baseman, will handle the duties before Game 2. Indians fans had pushed on social media to have actor Charlie Sheen, who played Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, a hard-throwing pitcher in the iconic movie Major League, throw out the first pitch. However, the Indians had already decided on Lofton and Baerga, who played together on Cleveland's 1995 World Series team. This is the final week of fall practices for the Moorhead State baseball team. Coach Mike McGuire has been pleased with how the Eagles have performed thus far.
I think we've seen good progress over the course of the fall. Got a lot of new guys to implement, and I think we've made good strides, you know, as a program and as well as individually. It's such a teaching time, development time for us, and I like what I've seen so far.
The Baseball Eagles will cap off fall practices later this week with a three-game inter-squad series. And finally, this evening, media members have forecasted the Moorhead State men's basketball team for a third-place finish in the OVC East Division this season. Belmont and Tennessee State were picked ahead of the Eagles. MSU coach Sean Woods, meanwhile, continues to put his players through their paces at preseason practices.
Our guys are getting better. These new guys, our freshmen, are picking up things a lot quicker than I thought. And this last week has been really, really good.
The MSU men will hold a public blue-gold inter-squad scrimmage on Thursday at 6:30 at Johnson Arena. That's it for sports. For Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Sean Delaney.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Eagle Volleyball will host Dayton at 6 p.m. Wednesday, Tennessee State at 7 p.m. Friday, and Jacksonville State at 2 p.m. Saturday. Tickets and additional information available from the Moorhead State Athletic Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. equities closed higher amid a plethora of corporate news, but gains were subdued by a rising dollar and falling oil prices. And the Dow Industrials finished with a gain of 77.32 at 18,223.03, although well off of earlier highs. The S&P 500 was up 10.17 at 2151.33, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 52.42 at 5309.83. New York Stock Exchange breadth was almost 3-2 in favor of winning stocks over losers. U.S. crude fell about six tenths of a percent, selling at $50.52 a barrel after Iran said it wanted to be exempt from an OPEC deal, which would cut production. And, of course, crude prices have rallied recently on expectations that OPEC would strike a deal to cut worldwide output next month. In corporate news, AT&T reached a deal to buy Time Warner for more than $85 billion, or $107.50 a share. And, of course, that actually was the first of a number of buyouts announced today, as TD Ameritrade also announced that it's buying Scottrade for $4 billion in a two-step deal with TD Bank. TD Ameritrade said it would end up paying $2.7 billion for Scottrade's brokerage business after the sale of Scottrade Bank to Toronto Dominion Bank's U.S. banking unit for $1.3 billion. Also, airplane interior maker BE Aerospace saw its stock surge 16.5% after announcing a deal that it's being bought out by Rockwell Collins for $6.4 billion. The economic data calendar was light, with only the IHS Market Manufacturing Index's flash read for October being released, and the number rose to 53.2 from a three-month low of 51.5 hit in September. Overseas European equities closed nearly flat after better-than-expected economic data, while political uncertainty in Spain dissipated. The pan-European Stock 600 index fell just 0.1%, while Spain's IBEX 35 gained 1.25%. In Asia, stocks were mostly higher, with the Japanese Nikkei rising 0.3% and the Shanghai Composite gaining 1.2%. And gold futures for December delivery fell $4, selling at $1,263.70 an ounce. Among S&P 500 stocks, your best performers were Corvo and NVIDIA, and the worst performers were Rockwell Collins and Chesapeake Energy. And among your Dow industrial stocks, the best performers were Microsoft and Boeing, and the worst performers were Merck and Chevron. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated up $1.24 at $113.12, CSX up 12 cents at $30.41, AEP up 54 cents at $63.02, Marathon Petroleum down 30 cents at $43.79, AEP up 54 cents at $63.02, and U.S. Bancorp is up 16 cents to finish at $44.01. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a look at your weather forecast for the listening area, including the counties of Rowan, Bath, and Carter. Tonight's going to be clear with lows in the lower 40s. Tuesday will be mostly sunny with highs in the lower 60s. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s. Wednesday will be mostly sunny with highs in the lower 70s. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain at 40%, lows in the mid-50s. Thursday will be mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of rain and highs in the mid-60s. And Thursday night will be partly cloudy with lows in the lower 40s. Your temperatures for the surrounding area. It's currently 67 degrees in Ashland, 65 degrees in Flemingsburg, 69 degrees in Inez, 67 degrees in Lexington, 67 in Winchester as well, and it is currently 66 degrees right here on the campus of Morehead State University.
And that does it for us on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had assistance from Chuck Baraz, Ellen Barnett, Samantha Morrill, Sean Delaney, Jacob Lindberg, Kenzie Thompson, Kyle Blankenbuehler, and Victoria Agee. From the Kentucky News Network, Will Clark. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Ashley Chapman and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next is 5 o'clock.